Well, as I predicted, Dr. Mark Rabinowitz is on the phone, and I'll be talking to him any minute now. Dr. Rabinowitz, how are you?
Oh, well, Pat. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Well.
Enjoying this nice weather we're having?
Yes, and you know, I'm one of those people. I like rain. I like it.
Well, the rain's important. We certainly need water.
Yeah,
grass needs
but I
to
just
grow.
Like it. I mean, I just like the way it is on a rainy day. A rainy day is a time to get things done.
You're absolutely right. That's what I've been doing today, getting things done.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. When it's a beautiful, sunny day, I want to go out. Out. I want to go to the shore. I want to go here. I want to go someplace outside. But that's a day. If you have a day off during the week and it's raining, I was just talking to my daughter. She's saying the same thing. She's going to get some things done because she's off today. Now, this is kind of interesting. I want to talk a little bit about your practice, and then we're going to talk about the mammography issue, which is it's in the news right now, I think. Right, correct? You want to talk about that? But first, explain to people what kind of a special practice that you have.
Well, we have a prevention-based practice.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, I use this acronym ATP, Access, Time, and Prevention.
Mm-hmm.
In a traditional medical practice, it encompasses usually about 3,000 patients, sometimes more, and the projections are that'll be up to 4,000 and 5,000, which just means it's an impediment to get access to care because it's just more people than what a practice can handle.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do that. It's a small practice. Access is through private phone lines, so people do not get answering machines or push one, push two, push three. All patients also have faster access to specialty care because we make the arrangements for them, so they're not suffering, waiting, going, jumping through hoops to get tests and scans and specialist visits. And I speak to the specialist myself personally, just as if the patient were a member of my family, which is how everybody is treated in this office, exactly as if they were a member of my family.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets a 30-minute visit for follow-ups and if they're ill, and everybody gets an hour and a half physical, which is just one of the most important things that can be done. And sometimes the physical yesterday they went 2 hours. And part of that leads into screening tests that statistically, and this is from data published in the New England Journal of Medicine, that 50% of all adults do not go for their regular screening tests. And one of the problems is that I think people get information from watching the media or watching television, listening to the radio, and newspapers, and what they're giving you are snippets. They're giving you outtakes and sound bites, and it's like sometimes people will say embarrassing things on television or radio, and then when you see the entire picture, you realize it was taken out of context, and it loses the meaning. So when someone comes to my office, the time is built into their visit that we can discuss the pros and cons. And we actually set up people's appointments. So if I tell someone they need a mammogram, we set it up for them. There's now three-dimensional mammography, but you have to know which patient would benefit from that and who you would order on. There's MRIs of the breast. You have to know who should get that. And recently, the American Cancer Society came out with some new recommendations, which are different than what people have been traditionally doing. And that's what I wanted to talk about this morning.
Mm-hmm.
There are many societies in the United States that look at cancer and look at screening tests. They are the American Cancer Society. There is a group that's government-based called the United States Task Force on Preventative Illness. There's obviously for mammograms, the American College of OBGYN. There's the American College of Radiology. And they don't always agree.
Mm-hmm.
And briefly, what the American Cancer Society has come out and said, in women with an average risk of breast cancer, and we'll get into what that means in a minute, should start having mammograms at age 40 and continue yearly until 54, and then every other year for as long as they are healthy, and this part I love, and likely to live another 10 years. So that that depends on the crystal ball of the physician, because one thing I tell my patients, I'm not God. and I can't always predict how long they're going to live. And you can have all the statistics in the world, but then there is common sense.
Mm-hmm.
It also said that though no longer recommends clinical breast exams, which patients get seen either by doctors or nurse practitioners or physician's assistant to feel for masses of women of any age. And previously, the society recommended, you know, mammograms starting at 40 and then being done annually with clinical breast exams.
Mm-hmm.
The rationale is that they look at data and they think that in younger women, breast exams may pick up false positive things that are there,
mm-hmm.
maybe cysts that end up getting biopsied needlessly or have to be imaged more frequently, and this creates false positives, and they base this because they think younger women are going to probably live longer anyhow, so that's how they're interpreting the statistics. The interesting thing when you read their recommendations, which were published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and I do have to tell you, even as a physician, one has to read these very, very, very carefully. And I've been in a situation where new guidelines or a study will come out, published in a major peer-reviewed medical journal, that will provide evidence for changing what our standard practices is. And then what happens is these studies get reviewed by world's experts, and then they publish editorials, and all of a sudden they'll say, wait a minute, before you change what you're doing, think about it. Look at each individual patient and personalize it. And that's what I do in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
Is every body that comes to me is treated as an individual. And that's unfortunately not true in people that go to huge clinic-type practices, because they can't. You're basically being treated as a number. You have a very limited time. And this is not the fault of the doctor. This is a system problem, not a doctor problem. And you're being told, well, these are the new recommendations. One of the problems, Pat, is that if this filters down to where the government gets involved or the insurance companies is what they're going to pay for, then people may be denied, denied care or screening tests that they would have otherwise wanted to go for, because now they have to pay for it. Maybe they can't afford to.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do people pay you? How does that work? I mean, you still do the insurance thing, correct?
Absolutely. No, we take all insurances. There are certain things that insurance companies don't cover. For example, with the Affordable Care Act, they put in preventative guidelines. Before this, a patient would come to you and say, well, doc, I want a checkup, and they wouldn't complain of anything. Well, the problem you ran into is you couldn't bill their insurance company for that visit because they weren't covered. So what doctors would do, when we're allowed trade secrets now, is they would say, well, have you ever been fatigued? Well, yes, I was fatigued. Okay, well, that's a diagnosis code. And that's because that's how you get paid, by diagnosis codes.
Mm-hmm.
But what diagnosis codes don't always cover are, well, let me go back a bit. A doctor today, a patient comes, I'm not complaining of anything, and the doctor can do a cardiogram, and actually, because that, you know, may be necessary to be done once a year in certain people, and get compensated for it, a doctor may be able to tell a patient, diet, exercise, and lose weight, get to the gym, get some routine blood mm-hmm. work, get a mammography, bone density, and colonoscopy, maybe go to a dermatologist for a skin check, and he can check preventative codes, and that may have taken you 30 seconds to get the words out of your mouth, and maybe that patient doesn't do any of it, but you've done what you needed to do, and you can actually
mm-hmm.
get billed for it. What you can't get billed for is bringing that patient back throughout the year for setting goals. So, for example, if I've set a patient up for screening tests, I may, in a traditional practice, you may not see them again. You may not see them again if they don't take medicine for years,
mm-hmm.
and you may never know if that ever got done. With our practice, we're in control of that. So after they leave me, they didn't meet with my administrative staff, who sets up their appointments, and we track it to see if they really
mm-hmm.
got it done. We then bring the patient back throughout the year to make sure that those preventative things were dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's lifestyle changes like smoking, which requires a lot of behavioral changes, and you have to keep bringing people back for that, just to work on that. Sometimes it's to see if we give people exercise programs
mm-hmm.
and diet. By the way, these are being done to manage existing health problems as well,
mm-hmm.
or to prevent existing health problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, and what about copays and all that?
Well, Well, if somebody comes in with a sore throat, a cold, yeah, blood pressure check, diabetic management, those things have ICD-10 codes now, mm-hmm, and can be submitted to their insurance company.
Oh, good. Oh, see, I think this is very good. I'm interested in the mammogram thing. That recently changed about women. Now, why did they change that, though? Why did they? Is there some danger in it? Is there some danger?
We do research in our own office as well, and we, mm-hmm, study things. And when it comes down to statistical interpretations, there's always bias involved. We're human beings. There's ways of looking at statistics and what they, mm-hmm, what their feeling is. And maybe it will come out to be true, maybe not, is they feel that by doing mammography less frequently in, mm-hmm, what they're calling average risk women. By the way, let me clarify what that means.
Yeah.
A woman is at average risk as somebody that does not have a first degree relative who has had breast cancer. It's somebody that does not have a genetic predisposition. There are, mm-hmm, some women that carry genes, which, by, yeah, the way, that gene comes from both the mother and the father. That predisposes them for risk for premature breast cancer. Angelina Jolie is probably the most notable example of somebody, mm-hmm, who is carrying a BRCA gene, BRCA1, mm-hmm, or 2, that puts her at risk for not only breast cancer, but for ovarian cancer as well. So those women would still need to be seen once a year. Or for women that may have had radiation to the chest. So in other words, that sometimes young people will get Hodgkin's disease, which is treated with chest radiation, and because of scatter of the radiation during their therapy, that can put them at risk for breast cancer. Those people still need to go every year, or start even earlier, maybe 35. And those are women that probably are best served by seeing a breast specialist.
You know, that is funny that you said that. You think that when people... What if you know someone that had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? And did they get all kinds of x-rays that you're talking about? Because then they got breast cancer.
Well, there's a difference between diagnostic and therapeutic radiation.
Oh, okay.
Therapeutic radiation, yeah, means that's given by a radiation oncologist, where high doses of radiation are delivered, mm-hmm, to the chest,
yes,
as a way to treat cancer.
Uh-huh.
That's different than taking an x-ray or a CAT scan.
But isn't that where this sprung from, this thing about mammograms?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Isn't that where this latest thing came, like changing the time? Why did that happen? Who's responsible for that?
I think what happens in medicine, mm-hmm, for certain very common problems, let's say hypertension, studies are constantly being done as to where is the right blood pressure. In cholesterol, studies are being done.
Mm-hmm.
What is the right number for bad cholesterol to prevent stroke and heart attack? And every 7 to 10 years, they then convene big conferences where scientists and academicians look at all this data, and they come up with new thinking based upon the data. And this is what happens in preventative medicine and in oncology also, mm-hmm, that when they continually look at studies, the studies indicate that maybe women don't need mammography as frequently. But what they, in the language, and I think women really need to understand, is that they temper the language to leave room for a woman's preference. So, and I tell my patients this, if a woman prefers and says, no, I think that may be their guidelines, but that doesn't make sense to me, since so many women are diagnosed with breast cancer each year and so many women die. There were, this year in the United States, there were 231,840 new cases of invasive breast cancer, mm-hmm, and 40,000 deaths.
Ooh.
And that's in spite of living in this country where women have ready access to mammography. It's covered under every insurance plan in the Affordable Care Act. Treatment is better than it's ever been, and it gets better every single year. And if you have to pick a cancer to get, that is among the has the best survival rates. But so it's out there. So a woman can say, you know what, doctor, I respect the American Cancer Society, but I want to go every year. And they have a, mm-hmm, right to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what other types of preventative exams should we be thinking about?
Well, for men, for example, I think what has to do with people, what I speak about is these guidelines and these societies are important because thinking in medicine changes. Mm-hmm. It, thinking changes, research changes, and you have to be aware of it. But then there's common sense. So, for example, in men, the United States Task Force on Preventative Illness says they see no mortality advantage in doing a rectal exam on a man or PSAs. Now, in 1 month, and this is anecdote, one doesn't practice by anecdote, I diagnosed two men with prostate cancer by their PSAs. One of them happened to be a physician. Both of them had aggressive forms of prostate cancer. They needed radical prostatectomies and some major abdominal surgery to remove the entire prostate to save their life.
But now, the PSA is what? That's a blood test, right? Is that a blood test for the lay people?
If they never checked the PSA and never did a rectal, those are men that would have presented to a doctor with metastatic cancer, cancer that spread, and they would, not only would they die, but they would suffer. And the goal is to prolong life. The goal is to catch things at their earliest. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just this trend or swing away from doing as much as we have been doing. But my personal opinion, and this mm-hmm. is just my opinion, is this is going to come back to rear its ugly head when they're going to see rises in cancer rates again for things that previously were preventable just because we looked. For a doctor to do a rectal exam or a man and a woman adds maybe an extra 30 seconds to the visit. Maybe a minute if you have to, but I don't even think so. 30 seconds. The stool card is inexpensive to test for blood. Mm-hmm. And we're all trained to feel for tumors. It's just not that difficult. And I will tell you something. Once again, speaking by anecdote, there are people that will be compliant and go for colonoscopies and then go for their gynecology appointment or come in for me and I do a rectal on my patients and you feel a mass. And that can develop within the 10 years between their colonoscopies. Mm-hmm. If you don't look, you'll never see it until it becomes a problem. And then the horse is out of the barn. So the whole point of preventative medicine and spending time with your physician is, you know, to be educated, to come in and say, listen, what are my options? And the patient always has the last say. I always tell my patients, you're the boss. I'm working for you. Mm-hmm. My job is to educate you. My job is to tell you what the standards are and then to give you what my personal opinion is. Not to give you a six-minute body massage and rush you out the door and figure out how do I get out of the room and get on to the next patient.
Well, now, let me ask you this. You're an internist, correct?
Yes.
Internal medicine. When patients come in, you give them an examination. I mean, I don't think that's done anymore. You have to go to specialists or something.
Well, all my patients get undressed, which I don't think is done anymore, because you have to understand the system. The system allows...
We hate that. We hate that, doctor. We hate that.
Well, you know, people do hate it, but you know what? I go for a checkup. I take off my clothes.
Oh.
I go for a skin check. I get a colonoscopy every so many years. You know, I'll have some crazy symptom that will get by me a stress test. Not a nuclear one, just a stress echo. But you know, Pat, there's no guarantee in life.
No.
All that. But my point is, at least I'm doing everything I need to do to make sure that I can circumvent a preventable problem.
Well, I think this is great, and let's give out your phone number if people want to call. You get a free 30-minute consultation, correct?
Yes.
Southampton office is 215-PREVENT. How easy is that? And then online at 215prevent.com. But so if people call you, they can have a free consultation, understand more about your practice and how you do things. It sounds absolutely fabulous. So we're going to give out that number today, and we'll give it out again, 215prevent. How's that?
Sounds good, or 215prevent.com.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. All right, Pat. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, doctor.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, Dr. Rabinowitz, I just want to tell you something. He's got a terrific practice. It's different. He's got a small practice. He has a lot of people. But you, I believe, it's a concierge or boutique or whatever they call it. And I think there's a certain fee for it, but all your insurance covers other things, but you pay a fee up front. And then they're basically, he's on call to you. And I think it's great. Friends of mine did this before. There was another doctor a few years ago, I think, when we were at Attleboro. They were at Attleboro, and they had a doctor with a practice like that. You pay up front, and then you pay something. I don't think it's exorbitant. I think he said it was like $3 a day it comes to. But anyway, so that's it. But everybody hates to leave their doctor, but I think you should give it a run. It's a free 30-minute consultation. And he's only located right close by in Southampton. Okay, 215-PREVENT.